Welcome to the Liberty Free to Be podcast. My name's Rachel Peru. Join me as I share a weekly dose of midlife inspiration, where you get to hear from some amazing people who are leaving a trail of inspiration along the way, breaking down midlife stereotypes and proving it's never too late to find your passion and purpose. From health, happiness, mindset to menopause, reinvention to rebelling, no subject is off limits. Living a life of liberty, free to be. Free to be whatever you want to be in midlife and beyond. Welcome back to a new week on Liberty Free to Be. How's everybody doing? I've had a bit of a funny old week this week. I've had lots of tests recently just to rule out some health issues that I've been having, rule out any cancers and all that kind of stuff. So it's been quite full on tests, but I had a cystoscopy at the beginning of the week, which led to horrendous cystitis, which is all a woman going through the menopause needs. Too much information perhaps for the start of the show, but that's been my week. Luckily, a hot water bottle has helped cure that, ibuprofen at the ready, and it is now going. And I've had the all clear, so that's the main thing. And why am I sharing this information with you? Because we shouldn't ignore any signs of anything that's slightly different about our bodies. And you need to make sure that you get things checked out for that peace of mind and for just knowing that you are kind of in tune with your body. So don't put it off. Go and get tests done if you need them. Go and speak to your doctor and then you can get through it the other side. So that's what I've been up to this week. Anyway, moving on. I've got a great guest for you today, Liz Cushion. I met Liz a couple of weeks ago. We were both speaking at one of Lisa Clifford's empowering events, which is part of International Women's Day back in March. And Liz was the opening guest speaker, and she gave an amazing speech about transformation and how what she's learned through her own journey, and now she's helping coach other women to revive and to find their inner spark. And I think lots of women in midlife lose that inner spark and don't know how to even ignite it or where to look for it. And so I love the fact that Liz is helping women along the way. And she was really motivating, and I really enjoyed her speech. So I knew I had to get her on and share with you today. So grab a coffee, sit back and enjoy. So good morning, Liz. Welcome to Liberty Free to Be podcast. How are you?
I'm really well. Thank you for having me.
I'm so pleased that you and I connected. We've only just really met. We started talking through LinkedIn and then both talked at Lisa Clifford's Empower You event, which seems like such a long time ago now. It's only a few weeks, but time flies, doesn't it? But I'm so glad that our paths have crossed and I found out all about you, and I can't wait to share you on the podcast today. My first question that I ask all my guests, so that we can get a kind of feel for where you're at right now, if you could describe yourself in three words, what would they be and why?
I think the first one I'd say is heart-led. I think it's a key part of who I am now, and also the work that I do with heart-led women leaders. So it's sort of a key message. I think for so long I was stuck in my head. I think there's so many of us are, and they're sort of head-driven, mind-driven, pushing. And it's really been part of my personal growth to balance head and heart. And now I'm really sort of motivated more by my heart through the decisions that I make. So I'd say heart-led. The second one I'd say is compassionate. I think that's, if I had to have a superpower, I think that's my superpower, because I've been through complex trauma myself. And I think once you've been through that and you've had to really dig deep inside yourself to move through, then you realize that other people, you know, if they're acting out, it's because they're hurting. And so it helps me to have more compassion for myself and for others. So compassion is my second one. And I'd say, and I'm sort of putting two words together on these, I don't know if that's cheating, but
that's allowed.
Pushing the boundaries. I'd say life adventurer for my third one. Life has been an incredible adventure for me, in ups and downs. And I love traveling the world. I love meeting new people, new cultures, new ways of being. I think it's really shaped me as a person. And I think I'm always, hopefully always going to be like that, always curious and wanting to learn and grow.
I love those three words. Thank you so much for sharing. And let's go back to this word heart-led, because I've heard it a lot recently. And how do you kind of explain it to people? Why is it so important that we become more self-aware of whether we're kind of thinking in our heads all the time and or whether we're actually thinking and using our heart and our intuition?
Yeah, I think, well, I can speak for myself and the women that I work with, but I know for me, you know, I wasn't taught anything about the heart growing up. I mean, in fact, it was almost that would be perceived as a weakness, I think, a vulnerability, and that was not a good thing. And so everything was driven by the mind. And what I mean by that is, you know, our mind is a great vehicle. It's, you know, we have our thoughts, our beliefs, all of that, because some people might not understand what, you know, what the sort of terms are that we're saying, but yeah, it's the thoughts that we have about things. And without awareness, we're just unconsciously living our lives, being driven by our thoughts, our belief systems, our values. And that's what happens. And that's, you know, that's what happened to me growing up. But the problem is, when we're younger, if we develop some negative beliefs, some negative perceptions about ourselves, then that's what drives us as we grow. And then that can lead to abusive or punishing behavior, acting out in different ways, which can be a very painful, I know, existence to live like that. And that was my mind. So unconsciously, those negative beliefs that I'd formed about myself, about others, about the world, I felt very unsafe. And so that was driving my whole life. Mm. And then I had a big awakening in India. As I know, it's a bit of an eat, pray, love.
Yes, but I love it. I have to say, that's my favorite book. I have to say, when I was going through divorce, it was very, very close to home. And a friend gave me the book and said, you have to read this. And it did, it made me want to go off traveling, and I didn't go to Uganda, but sidetracking, but that resonated with me, that book, so much. So carry on with your India story.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was really interesting because I'd done my own sort of version of Eat, Pray, Love. And then that book came out a few years later, and I thought, gosh, I could have, you know, that could be my journey in a way. It wasn't the divorce, but in a different way, but a lot of similarities. So I had my own personal awakening, and a lot of that was through mindfulness and different energy healings, actually. Someone gave me Reiki in India. And I had no idea at that point what it even was. I was very closed off. As I say, I'd been very stuck in my mind up to that point. And I'd rejected religion for a number of reasons. And then suddenly someone gave me Reiki, and I had this profound experience of feeling like I was opening up to something. And it wasn't something that I had to have beliefs or dogma around or to give up something. It was just something that I was a part of, and it was a part of me, and I felt connection for the first time. And so that was the sort of opening of a whole different path for me. And in that, it was sort of a heart opening, I think, as well. I started to not just, because this experience that I had, I couldn't process it with my mind. It didn't make any sense in a logical way, you know. Reiki, if no one's ever had it, so it's this form of energy healing. Someone can put their hands on you or the hands off you, so they're not even touching you, but you just lay down, and then there's this process that goes on. And I had no, honestly, I had really had no idea, which sort of makes the experience purer for me, because I really had no idea what was going on. But I suddenly felt this sort of bliss, this expansiveness, this connection, and my mind couldn't explain it, but it was the most beautiful feeling that I'd ever known. And so I became very curious about that and wanted to learn more about it. And it set me on this different path of exploration and curiosity, of exploring all areas of sort of personal growth, spirituality, and very holistic, actually. So physical, emotional, spiritual, social, all different aspects. But it was a real catalyst for that. It was been an interesting path, because my heart was very closed because of a lot of pain that I went through as a child. And so that might be me being stuck in my mind was actually a protection, I realized. because the pain in my heart was so great. And so it's been a journey, really, I would say, to sort of moving through the layers of all the different beliefs and the conditioning, judgments, criticisms, all of that, to really reconnect to my heart.
Which is beautiful, and I'm so glad that you have. And it is that unraveling, isn't it? But what made you decide to then work with other women and pass this on to other women? Because you do a lot of transformational coach work, helping women find their fire and ignite it again and find themselves again, don't you? But what was the catalyst to do that route, rather than just going off and having a happy life and just kind of thinking, I've sorted myself out, I'm going to get on with stuff?
It's sort of emerged, really. I think the first part of my life, when I was living in my mind and I was very closed, there was no purpose to my life. The only purpose that I could fathom was, well, I kept thinking, why was I born to create so much pain, to live in so much pain? That seemed to be the only purpose that I could think of then. And then I had this awakening and started to, I think once I started to learn things that really helped me, really helped me to transform myself, it became like a calling. That's the best way to describe it. It just felt like my purpose in life, that actually maybe there was even a reason why I'd gone through all of these things, because then if I could use those learnings to help someone else, then actually, as well as supporting them, it actually really helped me as well.
Yeah.
And I don't think I was, from the early start that I had, I don't think that was the path for me, to just go off and then just live this whatever life, this normal life. And I say that in inverted commas because I don't even know what that means anymore. But, you know, the more sort of stable and expected life that hasn't been mine. I have been this life adventurer and going off on different explorations, inner and outer, in the world. But I'm just driven now to share what I know with other people. And I think when I see the transformations that they have, then it's just such a beautiful gift for me. It always feels like an honor if I can do that for somebody else.
And it's interesting because I talk to lots of women that are in midlife that are going through this kind of stage of feeling a bit lost and disconnected with their lives, because their sense of purpose changes, because quite often if they have had children, they're fleeing the nest, so they've got their empty house, and their role as a mother changes because they're less needed in the same way as they were when they were younger, or if their work-life balance is changing. So there's this kind of period of transition where they don't really know how to connect and find that sense of purpose. And it is, you talk to so many people that once they've got this new sense of purpose, that can send them on a whole different trajectory, can't it?
Absolutely. And I'd just like to really, I suppose, give a ray of hope to that, because I didn't find my purpose until much later. You know, it was almost like, I don't know, like a snake shedding its skin or something. It was terrifying, actually, because I had been, even though I'd had my sort of trauma alongside, I had gone down the traditional route. First of all, you know, did my exams at school, went off to university, left university, went into the corporate world, was progressing in my career, even though I wasn't really happy or felt connected to it. But that was the ladder that I was climbing. I think, is it Stephen Covey who said, when you're climbing the ladder of success, make sure it's up against the right wall. And I think my ladder was somewhere completely like not where it was supposed to be. And I felt empty. Nothing really made sense, and part of that was through the trauma, but I think that also meant that I wasn't living the life that fulfilled me. I wasn't doing anything that brought me joy. I wasn't really doing, and in fact I was taking a lot of drugs in my 20s. I was trying to self-medicate. And I know that a lot of people don't take drugs, but maybe drinking alcohol every day, and that's ramping up a bit, or overeating. You know, I've used food to beat myself up, so all these ways, because it just wasn't happy inside, and I was trying to fill a hole, trying to fill that gap with something. And it was only when I started to find fulfillment that I've realized, that's what I was trying to sort of stuff myself in many different ways with other things.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Feeling empty.
On your TED talk, I think you mentioned the fact that so many of us look for that external source of happiness when actually we need to be concentrating on the inside. And that really touched me that when you said that, that's so true, because I can see different times in my life when I have used food or alcohol to kind of numb things, and actually when seeking pleasure elsewhere, and actually you need to be happy in yourself, don't you, first?
Absolutely. And so many, we don't even know where to start. I mean, when we're young, I do believe we're born sort of authentic, our authentic selves. And then, you know, life happens and we create our experience of life through our external environment. So first of all, through our caregivers, and then parents, teachers, friends. And we start to develop our identity through that, through the reflection of the outside world. And if that reflection isn't a positive one, then we don't develop a positive sense of ourselves. And it's very difficult then as we grow to actually know who we are. And that was a real, and in fact, then we can become really scared to look inside, because I thought I was going to find this evil monster inside of me. And actually what I found was just really traumatized younger parts of me that were stuck, and they hadn't received the love and nurturing and support that they really needed when I was younger. And so they'd got stuck in my system. This is what happens. But as I was able to turn towards them and start to give them the love, it's strange in a way, but to become the parent, to become the caregiver that I needed at that time. It's never too late to do that. It's quite a fascinating process. But when I started to do that, and then those parts could integrate, because that's what usually happens as children who have a healthy development, those younger selves integrate as the person develops. But if you haven't had that positive experience and you get stuck, then you have to sort of go back and integrate those parts, even as an adult. But it is doable. That's the good news. And then I realized, oh, actually, I did know who I was. In fact, you know, in my heart all along, I did know who I was. I just doubted it because I'd been told I was wrong so often growing up. I was told that what I thought was true wasn't true, you know, all of these things. And so I'd got very confused. And you mentioned intuition before in our hearts. And I think that's a really good point to come back to, because my intuition was always spot on, even when I look back as a child and I think, oh, I was right. I was right. But I was told I was wrong. And so I started to second guess myself. And I think we're all intuitive by nature. But we doubt ourselves. We've lost that trust often for ourselves. And so it's a process. And the work that I do is about helping women to reconnect to that trust, to explore that, to really start to trust their own intuition once more, and to let go of other people's judgments, other people's expectations, other people's opinions. And give ourselves permission to be ourselves. There's a brilliant quote. Do you know Byron Katie? I love the work of Byron Katie. And she said, it's not your job to like me. It's mine.
Yeah.
I love that.
And what kind of women do you work with? Is there a kind of general age pattern? Are you working with older women, or is it really varied?
It can be varied, but I have to say mostly I would say middle age. Maybe because I'm that age, I don't know. But or maybe they're the women who are getting to this point where they're really questioning. I think when we're younger, we're still in on that sort of hamster wheel, that treadmill, and we're still trying to figure ourselves out. Whereas the women I work with have kind of got to a level where they have kind of worked themselves out, but they've just lost a connection, or they're just feeling a bit stuck. They're being too hard on themselves. So they're heart-led women leaders. So they are already giving to others, but they've stopped really giving to themselves. And so my program is called Revive, because it's about really giving to yourself so that you can then, and also receiving from others, receiving that nurturing yourself, which again, as women historically,
we've not been so good at. Yeah. Why is that? Why do we find it so hard? We feel selfish, which actually is a good thing, I think, to be selfish sometimes, because you need to look after yourself. But we're taught from a young age, particularly women, that we shouldn't be like that. We should always put others first.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I don't know about you, but I couldn't even receive a compliment. You know, yes. I really struggled. Someone would say, oh, I really like that. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thinking, oh, yeah, you don't really know what you're talking about. You know, I'd be dismissing, sort of batting away all the time, all these, you know, people who would be trying to say that they'd seen something in me or they appreciated something. I'd be just sort of rejecting it because I was really rejecting myself on a very deep level. In fact, what I discovered was how much I hated myself. And that's a very, very painful thing, painful realization to come to. Because it was all these adults and events that had happened when I was younger. And it was blaming those things, I think, for the way that I felt. But I came to the realization when I started to look inside myself that it was me who'd been abusing myself for many years. So yes, undoubtedly those things happened when I was younger, but I was there was an inner abuser inside of me that was perpetually shouting at me, telling me I wasn't good enough. You know, every time I was going to give a presentation, it would tell me everyone's going to hate you. They're all going to reject you. You know, all of this inner abuse in my mind, which is very, very painful to realize. But actually, if you don't realize it, then you can't actually do something about it to change it.
I'm sure there'll be lots of women that are listening to this that will completely relate to that, because whatever you've been through in life, there is still, we've all got those voices in our head that are full with self-doubt and criticizing ourselves. And so where do we even start with this? What advice would you give to women that are feeling like stuck and they need to reconnect with themselves, but they don't even know where to start?
Well, obviously, I'm happy to have a chat if they want to have an initial 30-minute chat. You can just go onto my website and do that. I'm really, really happy because obviously everybody is different and unique in where they're at and what they need. So really happy to do that. But I think generally get some support, you know, whether that's me, you, anybody, whoever that is. But I think it's very hard to really discover what's going on for us without some external help, because often we're blind to it. We don't have the awareness. So getting some support, a coach or a therapist, or even a good friend to talk to help you to start to realize what's happening. But there's so many things out there now that weren't available when I was starting out. So many YouTube videos for free, so many apps, you know, TED Talks that you mentioned, you know, I've done one. So many people have done. I got so much inspiration from there. But I think there's many things people could do, but I think the journey is self-awareness. That's the key to the whole thing. So wherever you start and whatever you do or wherever you're at, it's about learning to go inside. And a key fundamental part of that for me is mindfulness. Mm-hmm. So I started it after that awakening on that beach in India. Then I started to learn. Well, I tried to do meditation. And I just want to say to anybody who's tried and found it difficult, I hear you. It took me a long time. And what I realized was I actually had so much trauma in my system that I'm not surprised that it was difficult for me, because what you do in mindfulness is start to see what's really going on. And for me, it wasn't pretty inside. And so again, if you've been through trauma yourself, please get some help, even if you're starting to learn mindfulness, because you need to be able to navigate that very gently, very carefully. But mindfulness, really, without mindfulness, I don't think we really can do any of it, because mindfulness is about being aware of what's happening in this moment. And if we don't know that, we can't actually do anything. So I think I would start with, you know, maybe that's a meditation group. I've been to Buddhist centers. They do great sort of low cost mindfulness groups, or it might be just a local meditation group or meditation apps as Headspace, Insight Timer, Calm. you know, loads of YouTube videos. So wherever it is, just start. Even if you're so busy and you've got a family and you're working, you can have 5 minutes, even if it's on the loo, to just listen to a quick meditation. And this is what I advise people to do if they're so busy. And actually, it's a big red flag for me. If someone says, I'm too busy to do this, then you absolutely have to do it.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're on a downward slope, and that downward slope will head towards burnout, because you cannot sustain that level of busyness without topping up your energy reserves. And that's through, you know, mindfulness, meditation, what you're eating, exercise, looking at what's happening inside yourself, you know, and step by step. It's not about needing to do everything at once, but those small things really can make a big difference, I found.
Thank you. That's great advice. And let's talk about the TED Talk. So how did it feel to get into public speaking? Because I was with you when I did my first one, and I was really nervous before I did it. I'm so glad I've got that first one out of the way. But to do a TED Talk is on my list. I would love to do it. I'm putting it out there into the universe. But how scary was that? Because had you done a lot of public speaking before that?
Well, first of all, I want to acknowledge you. I couldn't believe afterwards that it was your first public talk. You were just so incredible in so many different ways. So I really want to acknowledge you. What an incredible woman you are. I was just so inspired by your talk and how you delivered it. I was terrified of speaking in public, and people find that difficult to believe, but I was almost like a phobia, absolutely terrified. But I had, might sound a bit strange, but about 20 years ago, I had a vision, and I describe it as a vision separate to other thoughts, because it was so powerful, it was so vivid, and it stayed with me afterwards. And I felt like it was a glimpse into my future, and it was me standing on a stage, and I think it was the TEDx stage.
Yeah.
And I got this glimpse, and it felt so powerful, and I thought, oh my God. I thought, but I'm terrified of speaking. Like, how is this going to work? I don't know how to do this. And so I joined a group called Toastmasters, which is an amateur speaking group. So anybody can join it. It's a brilliant group if you want to speak. It's very supportive, and you can speak as little or as much as you like, but you get excellent feedback and you can grow. So that's how I sort of started there. And then I thought, okay, I really wanted to share my story to a wider audience, because I wanted to share the lessons that I'd learned, a bit like the sort of calling aspects. And obviously this vision was in my mind as well, still there. And so I joined the Professional Speaking Association. I was terrified. In fact, I went 3 times to meetings and left, because I just thought, oh my gosh, these people are just so incredible. I couldn't even stay. I felt so... my lack of self-worth at that point was just, and so I couldn't even stay. And so to actually join it in the end was quite a thing. And not long after I joined, there was a speaking competition. And I thought, oh gosh, it was only 5 minutes. And I thought, right, I'm going to take the bull by the horns and I'm going to do it. And it's only 5 minutes. It was a competition. So there was lots of other more professional, well-known speakers than me at that point. And I thought, right, I'm just going to do it. So I got on stage, shared my story for 5 minutes. There was 13 other speakers. And so I was absolutely, honestly gobsmacked, because I won. It was the London region and I won the competition. Yeah. And I just burst out crying. I literally couldn't believe it. And then I realized I had to go to the national semifinals. And so there was me thinking, I'm just going to speak for 5 minutes. And then it became this huge process. And I got through to the national semifinals, and then I was in the finals. Didn't win. I was in the finals. I mean, it was just incredible. But so that process sort of catapulted me in my speaking, because I got a lot of support, a lot more visibility.
Yeah.
And then not long after that, I was publishing my book, This Is Me, My Journey to Mental Wellbeing. And I just saw an advert on Facebook. It's one of those things. I do trust sometimes these things come along.
Yeah.
And it was to speak at TEDx Norwich. And I thought, oh, my friend spoke there last year. Let me have a look at that. And as I started reading it, I started getting all these sort of tingles, like, oh my gosh, should I apply? And it said that that day was the deadline. And so I literally had like, I don't know, 3 hours or something. I thought, let me just get something over. Did it so quickly and pinged it off. And then I think it was a couple of days later, it's like, you're in. And it was a bit like entering that speaking competition. I thought, oh no, no, I've got to. And it was like only 6 weeks away or something.
Yeah, now you've got to do it.
Now I've got to do it. So this is the theme for me. I sort of enter something, take a little step, and then suddenly it's this. It becomes this bit. But I do trust that that's what's meant to happen. Yeah. And so then I, you know, very quickly had to, so I had my book came out, and then I gave my TED talk 2 weeks later, I think. So it was a lot in a short space of time. But again, I was absolutely terrified. I mean, before I went on stage, I actually thought I was going to be sick. My legs were shaking so much, but I'd rehearsed it so much that I literally could have said it in my sleep, I think. Mm-hmm. And it was quite interesting because I was aware I didn't want to speed up because that's what can happen when you're nervous. I actually slowed down. So my TED talk ran over time, but they said it was okay. I kept seeing the red light flashing and I thought, I'm just going to have to keep going. But I think because I was so scared, I really slowed it down. And it's one of the things I'm most proud of myself. There was like 36,000 people live streaming or something. That. So it was a huge thing. But again, it's about sharing the message.
That's amazing. And what I love about that is it's such a good example of not letting your fear stop you from doing stuff, because look where it ends up. It leads you down a different path. And so what is so easy to be scared of doing something because it's new to us, that we don't dip our toe in the water. And like you said, you started at Toastmasters and then ended up on a TEDx stage, and now that's what you're doing, you're public speaking and you're much more comfortable with it. You've just got to take that first step, haven't you?
You've got to take it. You've just got to do it. There's a great book, Susan Jeffers, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway.
Yes, one of my favorites.
Yeah. You've just got to, because if you're waiting until you feel like you're ready, I think you could be waiting forever. I sort of jump in and then try and, you know, catch up as it goes along. And that's a way to just, you know, push through those fears. We've all got them. That's the other thing. When I joined, you know, speaking to lots of other really successful professional speakers. And what surprised me was they all said they get so nervous before they go on stage. Like sometimes they want to throw up. And I thought, wow. So actually it's, you know, it's a thing. And they like that because it's the adrenaline. It means that you care.
Yes.
That you're sort of, it's almost like the energy coming through so that you can give the talk. So, so just to reassure people as well that, you know, it happens to the top professional speakers as well.
And what plans have you got for the future? Do you plan ahead, or do you just go with the flow? Are you hugely ambitious?
I've stopped having big plans now, because what I found is that life just seems to take me wherever it wants to take me. And I don't mean that flippantly. I mean that I literally get course corrected. Like, doors will shut on me and new doors will open. And so what I've really started to learn to do, and again, it's some of the work that I do, is learn how to trust your intuition and surrender. And surrender isn't passive. It's not like I just surrender and think, right, just wait for someone to come and knock on the door. I just mean surrender and follow the flow. Where's the flow at this? If I'm really trying to do something and it feels stuck all the time and I'm really trying to push it, then I just let go now and say, okay, let me let that go and see. And sometimes I have to take a step back, and that's hard, because for so long I was pushing. I kept thinking I had to do it all. I had to push and make it.
Yeah.
It was exhausting, absolutely exhausting. So now it's about trying to tune in. And when I say tune in, it's about listening to that intuition. Where is life trying to guide me to? What is it trying to tell me? Is it telling me to stop? Is it time to push? You know, all of these things. And I think there is that time to do both of those things. But we're just taught, I think, to push, that success is having these big goals and you've got to push to get them. And that works for some people. Just it really isn't it isn't the way that I work. I think in terms of having goals, it's just really to make as big a positive difference as I can through everything that I do, and to support as many heart-led women leaders to revive their inner spark, know their worth and thrive. That's what I'm really passionate about. So whatever that looks like, I think I used to think I had to be a certain level or it had to look a certain way. And yeah. actually that was just, it was punishing actually, because I was never there.
Yeah.
And so I was always felt like I was falling short. Whereas now I just feel like as long as I'm doing the best I can, and as long as I'm following my heart and trusting and keep showing up and taking those leaps of faith, then I'm on the right track.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that I've learned is our ego often gets in the way, doesn't it? Because we see other people really that maybe have hundreds of thousands of followers and hundreds of thousands of people in their Facebook group or their coaching group. And you feel like you fell short compared to them. But actually, if we let go of the ego side of stuff and realize that you're creating a ripple effect one person at a time, then that's amazing, isn't it? And we've got to appreciate that and stop and take a step back and say, well, actually, yeah, I'm doing what I'm doing has an impact.
Absolutely. And whatever that impact is, it's okay. And, yeah. you know, I've really learned, again, I've talked to some people who I've held up here. It's like, oh, it's, and actually, you know, nothing is ever what it seems. And sometimes the compromise that they're making isn't one that I'm prepared to make. And so we've all got to go with what works for us. And that's, you know, that's individual. And that's what success means to any of us. And the way that we get there, again, is the way that we work. I work from the heart. I balance it with the head. And they're the people that I like to work with.
And how can people work with you? How can people find you, Liz?
So there's my website, lizcashin.com. I've got an unusual name, so I'm quite easy to find if people look for me. But I do transformational retreats, so residential retreats, a 12-week program, online program, a group program for women, and also transformational one-to-one sessions that I use a blend of, you know, coaching and other things that I know just to help people to move forwards.
Brilliant.
So everything's on my website, yeah.
I'll put all the links on the show notes as well. My last question that I ask all the guests. So my new slogan for my new podcast is Liberty Free to Be. So what does free to be mean to you?
I think for me, it has to be free to be me. Yeah. Free to be me in capital letters, and not needing anyone else's permission to do that. Just giving myself permission. The freedom to be me.
Love that. What a perfect way to end. Thank you so much. And I hope our paths cross again, Liz, but keep doing all the amazing work you're doing and good luck for the future with everything. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. I've loved being here with you. Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you. Well, another great conversation. Really enjoyed talking to Liz. And right at the beginning of that conversation, Liz said that one of her superpowers is compassion. And I love that. I love that she's got a superpower and that's one of them. What would your superpower be? I'm not sure what my superpower would be. I'm going to have a think about that and I might share it with you next week. But it's a great question, isn't it? What is your superpower? What's your unique superpower that you can own and embrace as you are going into midlife? Own it and celebrate it. So have a good think about that. That's a question to leave you with. But really enjoyed talking to Liz. And, you know, if you are somebody that is stuck and you are feeling a bit lost and disconnected, you can get help. There are some amazing people like Liz out there. I will leave all her links in the show notes so you can go and check her out, find her. Definitely recommend watching her TED Talk. I'll leave a link on that so you can find out a little bit more about her own journey. And also she's written an amazing book called This Is Me, best-selling author, This Is Me. So I'll put all those links in the show notes. I will be back next week, but in the meantime, keep being fabulous. Thank you for listening to the Liberty Free to Be podcast. I hope it's left you feeling inspired. If it has, why not come and join my free Step Out of the Bubble Facebook group? It's a safe space where you can connect with other women all at different stages of their midlife journey, supporting and inspiring one another. Oh, and don't forget to come and say hello on Instagram at RachelCarew1. I'd love to know what free to be means to you. If you're loving the podcast, please don't forget to subscribe, rate and review. Your support is much appreciated. I'll be back next week, but in the meantime, keep being fabulous.